Thanks for listening to this episode of the Westerosi Primer. For full show notes and more about all things Westeros, head to thewesterosiprimer.com. Before I start playing the intro music, check out this friend of the show.
Are you ready to wow your friends with trivia tidbits about your favorite books and authors? Join me, Jess.
And me, Rachel.
On our new Book Trivia Podcast.
Each episode, we kick off with some fun book trivia, then dive into our featured read with plenty of juicy behind-the-scenes insights.
If you love books, authors, and a side of silliness, then why not give us a listen?
Find us at booktriviapodcast.com or on Reddit, Instagram, and Substack, where we are Book Trivia Podcast.
Greetings, fellow acolytes. Welcome to another episode of the Westerosi Primer. My name is Liz. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. I hope you enjoy this journey of all things Westeros. And in this episode, I'll be talking about House of the Dragon, episode titled Unbowed and Unbent. It's official. We have now finished watching episode 5. Which means there are just 3 more episodes left of the season before we will probably wait another 2 years for the final season. So this is another episode where we got multiple storylines, and quite a few things happened in this episode, and yet I will admit it's nothing super riveting in terms of action happening. But some things did happen, and it looks like this was another episode where ultimately the various storylines are setting up future events. So I'm just going to briefly go over a few storylines that happened. As always, I would appreciate all of you listening to this episode to head over to thewesterosiprimer.com, where you can find out more information about this podcast, and also you can find out information about previous episodes that I have released. You can also sign up to the newsletter where you can get notifications of future episodes and the occasional blog post that I release about things related to the world of Ice and Fire. Whether it is news about the various adaptations or just some general thoughts and things that are related to this fictional universe. There had been some online speculation, and even I had started suspecting that this episode would include a battle, but as it turned out, it didn't, which I'm sure disappointed a whole lot of people. There were even people who allegedly saw this episode ahead of time, stating that, oh, a lot of stuff happened in this episode that is shocking, etc. But chances are those were probably people trolling other people online. Personally, I have a tendency to be very skeptical of people who leak things. Granted, sometimes leaks are actually real information, which is annoying. Other times, it's definitely a bunch of very bored people who like to troll other people online because they really have nothing better to do with themselves. Hence, I tend to generally ignore a lot of leaks. If they turn out to be true, okay, whatever. If they turn out to be fake, then I didn't believe you anyway, so whatever. But at any rate, Kristen Cole. He and his men attempt to do a guerrilla campaign against the Rivermen and some of the Northerners who are supposed to be heading towards Tumbleton. But it's pretty clear that there is just no point in doing a guerrilla attack against them because, first of all, a majority of Kristen Cole's men are not from the Riverlands, so they are not as familiar with the terrain as the actual locals are. And also, they are completely outnumbered, so it's pretty limited what they're able to achieve anyway, which is what we see in the episode. I have to say, though, that even though there's not a lot happening with this particular storyline, I do have to appreciate they gave Fabian a really good speech towards the end of the episode where he gets to talk a little bit more about what he's thinking and what he's feeling at this point in his life. It's also really interesting to watch the behind the scenes information after the credits where Fabian actually talks a bit about how Kristen Cole has gone into this whole situation figuring that it's ultimately a suicide mission, that most, if not all, of his men and likely himself is not going to come back from what they're doing. They are very likely going to die. He chooses to do what he can to be a knight, to fight the way he has been trained and how he has lived up to this point. Which in that respect, I can understand the character and I can respect his sense of self, his sense of duty, and what he believes is how he should live his life. Of course, that still doesn't mean I like the character. I have never liked the character ever since I first learned about this particular part of Westerosi history. I have never been a fan of Kristen Cole, but I can see how they did make an attempt to humanize the character and make him a more 3D figure versus the limited information you get in some of the material that George wrote. Because if you were to read Fire and Blood and also read other sources from George, the information you get provided about these characters is pretty limited. So it's interesting to watch a live action TV show where you see these characters speaking and acting. Whether or not the writing in general for the TV show is good or bad, that's left up to the audience to make that conclusion. Another really interesting storyline that we got to see a little bit more in this episode is Aemond, where they already hinted that Aemond was actually in Harrenhal. And of course, I certainly knew he was in Harrenhal the whole time, because where else could he possibly be? The guy was stabbed in the back, quite literally severely injured. It's not like he was going to go anywhere, really. And it's pretty clear that Alice Rivers has her reasons why she's going out of her way to hide him. And of course, because he's the biggest threat in terms of dragon riders for the Hightower faction, he is obviously the number one target for Rhaenyra. And as we saw throughout the episode and in earlier episodes, they want to know where the hell he is and they want to know where Vhagar is. Because as long as Vhagar and Aemond are still out there, he could come back at any time to create a bigger headache on the battlefield. Since he was last sighted at Harrenhal, naturally every bounty hunter all over Westeros is heading over there to find him. And a couple of different times we see that attempts to capture him were thwarted just barely. We also saw that he is starting to recover from his injuries. It will be interesting to see how this particular storyline develops. I have a sneaking suspicion that we will see Aemond survive this season, because they've been hinting for a while that there's eventually going to be something major happening to Aemond while he's in the Riverlands. And based off of what they've depicted so far in these 5 episodes and the fact there's only 3 more episodes left, I have a sneaking suspicion that Aemond's fate will be sealed in season 4, but that's just my speculation. Speaking of the way they've been depicting Kristen Cole's storyline in this season, I have a sneaking suspicion that they're pretty much setting up for Kristen Cole to die in this season based off of exactly how Kristen Cole is acting. And I do have a sneaking suspicion it's going to be, if not next episode, probably episode 7. But we will find out soon enough. Another storyline we got is also following Aegon. Aegon is experiencing midlife crisis is not the right term, but he's been struggling. He's been trying to figure himself out and figure what the hell is he going to do now, because as we've seen, he has been declared dead and he's on the run. Rhaenyra knows perfectly well he's actually alive, but he's gone somewhere. And she's very interested in getting him back because, considering he's technically the king on the Iron Throne for the Hightower / Green faction, she has to kill him. She doesn't really have much of a choice. She has to get rid of him because he is the number one claimant to the throne against her. He's been struggling for a long time, all the way back in season one, as to what to do with himself and what his purpose in life is, really. He gets told he's supposed to be the king, and he ultimately agreed to be the king. Yet he has been completely ineffectual when he was still in the Red Keep. He bungles up so many attempts to get things done. It's especially really fascinating, the two storylines, his storyline and Aemon's storyline, because you see that both brothers have a weird complex towards each other. Aemon seems to be pretty envious of Aegon because Aegon was the older brother, and he views the situation as Aegon being almost the favorite, which is crazy to think about because Aegon feels that his brother Aemon, in terms of qualities, is actually the superior brother because Aemon is academically smarter than him. He is better connected with their Targaryen heritage. He's also a very good fighter. He has all the skills of a knight, especially valuable considering that he doesn't have an eye, which just makes him even more formidable, the fact that he can fight really well with a handicap. And meanwhile, Aegon has never really fought anybody, although he has stabbed people successfully in this episode, as we saw. And if any of you listened to the previous episode, I did mention that I had a sneaking suspicion that Aegon's experience of disguising himself as someone who's a refugee and a member of the small folk is not going to result in him becoming a more humble person. He's going to be even more determined to get his place back on the throne and wield the power of the throne to deal with people he doesn't like. And we're already seeing hints of that in this episode. It's also funny that we see the appearance of Tywin Lannister, who we haven't seen since the very first episode. So now Larys and Aegon have somebody else who is going to provide them with some form of support, even if it's not ideal, which we saw how they were debating about where to go next, because obviously they can't stay at Rook's Rest for very long. They have to eventually move. The question is, where exactly do they go next? And that's what they were debating when Aegon ended up stabbing that guy, because that guy was being extremely nosy, poking his nose into business that was not his, and found Aegon's crown. which means that potentially he could out them as being not who they claim to be. So, of course, to settle the matter, Aegon gets his revenge and stabs the guy to death to shut him up. Whether or not that has any consequences in the next episode, we will find out soon enough based off of the episode preview. We also get a look at what's happening with Ormond Hightower, and we find out that a lot of this craziness happening in King's Landing to sow chaos for Rhaenyra is being orchestrated by him. He somehow has agents within King's Landing receiving messages and sending out messages to cause all sorts of problems for Rhaenyra on top of pre-existing problems that she has to deal with ever since she showed up in episode 2. I'm not going to lie, it is a very clever plan. Whether or not this will fully destabilize her rule remains to be seen. Ormond is prepared to gamble on the idea that Rhaenyra is not going to burn down Tumbleton because it is a trading town and the local lord and lady had sworn to her versus backing Aegon. And it would look terrible if she were to allow a town that swore fealty to her very early on to be destroyed by her own army. It's going to be interesting to see how the Battle of Tumbleton gets portrayed in the show. They have been hinting that this is going to come up at some point in this season. I had thought they were going to do it in this episode, but of course they didn't, so it's hard to say. It's still possible they could do it in the next episode, but given the track record of HBO wanting to leave these shocking battles to the penultimate episode of the season, it's very possible they may drag this out into episode 7. But I don't know. It's hard to tell with what they are going to be doing with this one. I will be interested to see, though, if the battle ends up the way George wrote about it or if they've changed what happens. Because Tumbleton is terrible and nobody comes out of that battle looking like the good guy at all. Basically, if you were to read Fire and Blood and you read about the Battle of Tumbleton, absolutely nobody involved in that battle comes out looking good. Everybody, literally everyone that participated in this battle came out looking like a villain. And you cannot convince me otherwise, is all I'm going to tell you. Okay. Nobody came out of that looking like they are the hero or they are justified. That may be my opinion, but I would say quite a few people also have the same opinion. But that's that. So I will talk about two more storylines before closing out for this week. So the next storyline we also looked at heavily in this episode is actually Helaena and Alicent. It's really interesting to see more of this mother-daughter relationship because we never really saw a lot of their relationship in the first two seasons. We finally get some better understanding of how their relationship is because one of the things that ran through this TV show is that you had both Rhaenyra and Alicent who ended up in situations where they lost their mothers and they had to become young women in a situation where they are almost entirely surrounded by men who have been controlling a lot of their lives. And it's interesting to see how Alicent handles being a mother. The thing that I always found strange in the show has been you never really got an understanding of how Alicent is as a mother. The only thing you got out of it really is that given how many problems her children got up to, you get the feeling that Alicent is just not a very good mother. You end up feeling like she's not present at times with her kids, and that's why their relationships are pretty dysfunctional. Aegon at times feels like his mother abandoned him. Aemond also at times feels like his mother abandoned him. It seems like Alicent almost pities Helaena in many ways because she probably sees aspects of herself in her daughter. And to be fair, Helaena did get the short end of the stick a lot of times in the story. And I can tell you it's pretty similar in the book in the sense that Helaena is constantly one of the pawns that gets pushed around in the story. And so many things happen to her in the story, and you do end up feeling very sorry for her. Helaena is one of those characters in this part of Fire and Blood that you wind up feeling the most sorry for, because she's one of those characters where you can genuinely say she is truly one of the innocent characters, where she never does anything to really harm anyone or to take advantage of other people to put herself in a better position. So I would say she's definitely one of those characters that was genuinely an innocent victim of circumstances completely out of her control. And it's pretty messed up how she gets treated a lot of the time. And I do feel sorry for the character. She is one of those characters I feel deserves a lot better. And I'm sure those of you who have been watching the TV show, if you were to rewatch these episodes and really pay more attention to this character, I would say that's a fairly accurate way they portray her in the show, in the sense that she's always been a very nice character who gets pushed around a lot, like I said before. The only thing I disagree with is how they made her neurodivergent and they gave her a version of dragon dreaming, because that is something that is not in the book. It's never been mentioned once the entire time. Now, you could argue it's because George wrote the book from the perspective of a maester who does not know the minutiae of what's going on with all of these characters. Plus, the maester in question is writing the book Fire and Blood decades after all of these events occurred. So he wouldn't know anything firsthand. He bases his writings on the recollections and written work of other people who wrote journals and letters and things. So you could make a valid argument that maybe the reason why George didn't write her as neurodivergent is because logically the narrator of the book wouldn't know that. Which, okay, I will give you some credit that is something that would make sense. I just kind of feel like if there were indications that Helaena was anything at all like this within the context of George's writing, there would have been some hinting at that. There would have been more mentions of Helaena being a little bit odd, but there was no mention of that. So that's why, to me, it feels like this is another one of those things that would be more like TV invention. But at any rate, so the whole point I'm trying to get at is that it is pretty nice to see that we get a little bit more about Alicent and Helena's relationship in this episode. And you can argue that Alicent is being really pushy and trying to dictate Helena's life a little too much, but I will give Alicent a little bit of credit that they are in a very difficult situation, and she is very well aware that if Helena's pregnancy goes to term and it turns out the baby is a boy, Rhaenyra is going to be put in a situation where she's going to have the kid either killed or exiled. But basically, Helena will never be able to keep the baby if the baby turns out to be a boy. If the baby turns out to be a daughter, this second daughter for Helena would end up being a hostage regardless. So it's a very difficult situation. And I actually do feel sympathetic to not just Helena, but also I do understand Alicent's point. And Alicent is still trying to help her daughter. If her daughter refuses to drink the moon tea, then the only other option she can think of is to escape. It's going to be very interesting as well to see how the dynamic between Missaria and Alicent develops, which they are indicating is something that is starting to happen as well. So to close out this episode, I will now go on to Rhaenyra and Daemon. Rhaenyra continues to struggle being the queen. She has way too many problems piling up, and Ormond Hightower's plots are certainly adding to her problems because the Goldcloaks are disgruntled and now they are being attacked two by two, and it's creating additional chaos on top of them not getting their salary on a regular basis anymore. Daemon is trying to help out in his own way with some of these problems because, to be fair, the Goldcloaks are basically the law enforcement within King's Landing. And if there isn't a functioning law enforcement keeping things under control in the capital, Rhaenyra is going to have even more problems happening in the city, because if you don't have law enforcement, who is going to help deal with crime that inevitably happens in a major city like King's Landing? Daemon even manages to eventually figure out that Ormond Hightower is responsible for some of the problems in the city, because they managed to capture one of his agents and they torture the guy into revealing what's going on. But of course, his compatriots are retaliating, as we saw at the end of the episode when they managed to kill a bunch of the Goldcloaks, including Ser Largent, in their own headquarters. If you were to watch the preview to the next episode, you will see that the only way to stop some of this chaos is to deal with Ormond. And it's indicating and hinting that the battle is in the next episode, but we will see about that. It's really interesting to also continue with the dynamic between Daemon and Rhaenyra, because you do feel like Daemon is trying to do a lot more to help Rhaenyra. And Rhaenyra is just put in a situation where she is still being pulled in multiple directions because there's just way too many problems that she has to deal with. And that is her struggle. Will any of this get resolved? We shall have to wait and see. So that is all for this week's episode. Tune in next time where we will see what happens. So, Valar Morghulis. What did you think of this episode? Check out the WesterosiPrimer.com and let me know what you think of this episode. If you have a friend or two that might like the show, make sure to share.